Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I am Kevin. I am your host. True Wealth, as always, is sponsored by Coins Plus. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin precious metals broker, dealer, depository service. We're always involved in the purchase and sale of coins, collections, estates, and especially precious metals. We are your wealth and capital preservation specialists and consider ourselves to be precious metals portfolio experts. We believe we're pretty good at it. We've done it once or twice, and we've been in the market a few decades. So we feel we've got a pretty good handle on how to build portfolios that really benefit the client. We offer the highest rated privately held depository service in a very large broad state region, meaning our building was built from the ground up with extraordinary levels of security and construction at a level that would probably blow your mind. Seriously, our building is built better than any bank I know of. I can't speak for maybe really old banks from the 1800s when they really used material, but we used material. We used incredible amounts of concrete and steel and layer upon layer. We did use composites they didn't have back then. We have, in addition to thick, you know, inch thick plates of steel around significant vaults and things like that, we also used bullet and bomb resistive military grade Kevlar, bullet and bomb resistive polycarbonates for our windows, etc. It's a very secure facility. You can feel very comfortable. When you keep stuff in our safe deposit box, we absolutely do not keep a key to your box. We keep the guard key. That means you get two keys. We have what's called a guard key. You can't get in without our key, but we can't get in without your key, period. That's a peace of mind to you, the client, because you just know that you don't have to worry about stuff like that. And we did that on purpose. It just removes any doubt whatsoever. And people are never allowed in our safe deposit box room unless they are accompanied by an employee. We have 24/7 motion surveillance video. We have heat sensors, seismic detectors, normal alarm, motion sensors, and on it goes. It's, you know, we did the best we could, and we didn't pinch any pennies when we were getting into the security of this facility. And trust me, I spent a lot of extra money to make it probably the most secure facility I could imagine, in addition to trying to make it also very architecturally aesthetic. When we first put it in, I actually had some Christians, one guy in particular, make comments, like derogatory comments, about how nice it was. In other words, pretentious or whatever. It's not pretentious. It's very beautiful. But I just was in D.C. looking at what our founding fathers, men of God, built. Do you really think God wants us to be, you know, half-baked and just do lame, pathetic, good enough, mediocre work? Absolutely not. Did he do that in his creation? You know, can you imagine if we lived in a world where everything was just kind of sick and gaunt and the water was bad and we were all kind of weak and frail and, you know, everything was just kind of gross looking. No, nature cries out his beauty, his magnificence, his glory, and we are created in his image. One of the single most profound aspects that make us like God is our ability to create, which is the byproduct of our free will. Okay, we make our own choices. And it is interesting that when you go to D.C. and things like that, the communist method right now is to remove all statues and historical items that create a sense of nationalism and replace them with disgusting art. There was a spot in D.C. where they had replaced a statue of a famous general on a horse and replaced it with this great big metal sculpture of what looked like a bloated fat Buddha guy with a penis. I'm not kidding you. And, of course, that was a bill passed by the left because they wanted to get rid of, you know, whoever it was, Stonewall Jackson years back before this became politically correct for them to attack it all. Now, the right is paying attention when they're doing this, but people don't realize they've already made headway. George Soros has been behind all of this for quite some time. And he is terribly evil, and I know that a lot of times you get that, you know, vilification of conspiracies. And no, this guy's the real deal. He's a multi-billionaire. He's the real Dr. Evil, okay? He's done terrible, terrible things throughout history. He's absolutely, he releases phony documentaries about climate change. He knows he's doing it. He's working with anybody to tear at the fiber of this nation. And if you might think, well, so what, Kevin? He did the phony thing on climate change. Okay, well, how about being a Jew and selling out, having your dad pay the Nazis to hire your son, to have your son, who's a Jew, help root out all other Jews for concentration camps and help the Nazis confiscate all the assets of the Jews and sharing in the spoils. That is a fact. George Soros, it's part of his biography. He says, no problem. Someone else would have done it anyway. And he's just bad, okay? I mean, he's a bad man. I don't know what else to tell you. He's behind this stuff. He's extremely, extremely wealthy. He broke the Bank of England through shorts and manipulation. He took £3.3 billion from the government's coffers, exacerbating the already bleak recession. He fueled the economic crisis in Malaysia by, you know, playing those markets wrong. He broke the Bank of Thailand. Now you might think, so what? So what, folks? This is monetary manipulation where he was using derivatives to intentionally destroy the economic fiber of nations, walk away with incredible amounts of profit, and leave countless people penniless and broke. He literally laughs about it. He's taken a huge run at destroying Hong Kong's economy. They say that if the attempt was successful, that he would have made $160 billion. They said that he went on a buying spree, sinking $118 billion into the stock market. Hong Kong Bank had to sink $118 billion to block Soros's currency manipulation. To block his currency manipulation. Sorry about that. A little technical difficulty there. So I'll repeat that. The Bank of Hong Kong had to sink $118 billion into the stock market to block Soros's currency manipulations, and it trashed Hong Kong's reputation among financiers and cost the government it cost the government huge amounts of money and their reputation. And luckily, the Hong Kong Bank did the right thing. The only time we've seen this, they fought to keep their locals safe from a full-blown meltdown. Soros has never apologized. He laughs about it. He illegally overspends on political campaigns. He makes he has 527 groups in the middle of the last decade, a wave of they something known as 527 groups suddenly appeared, advocacy groups that try to influence elections. They became notorious for using loopholes to get around campaign contribution laws, and when the FEC, the Federal Electoral Commission, finally cracked down on them, the worst offenders receive big fines. One of the biggest fines of all was handed to a group funded by George Soros. They have the America Coming Together Act, a group of that's determined to see John Kerry in the White House at all costs. It was founded in 2003, spent $137 million on the 2004 Get Out the Vote effort. And when that didn't work, which potentially could have wound up influencing the outcome of the election. So as most of its contributions were illegally violated the federal limits, they were actually hung up. The process was hung up in courts intentionally until they got Obama into office and Eric Holder into the Attorney General's office. Eric Holder overwrote the prosecution and waived George Soros, let him go, okay, for absolutely trying to manipulate our democratic election. This could be part of why Hillary and them are convinced that Trump used his billions of dollars to manipulate the market or the campaign with the Russians to win. I think they actually believe the lie. The fact that they can find nothing, and then they keep floating this theory out there. And, you know, the ignorant that do not go to original sources of information, they spew it. I saw an interview on the streets here recently by Judge Jeanine Pirro, who was asking people questions about Trump. And numerous of them were saying that it's a fact. It's a flat fact that he colluded with the Russians, etc. There's no fact at all. None. Okay. None, none, none. And yet the media has brainwashed them to think so. They've pushed in 2007, the Electoral Commission fined the group $775,000 and began prosecution, which is where, as I said, Obama let him go. They funded this Lynn Stewart, bad dude, a hate preacher jailed in 95 who inspired the 93 World Trade Center bombing that killed 6 and injured 1,000. He was behind that. He financed that. He's got all these tax loopholes passed at a level you can't even imagine. He keeps his money overseas. He's got a loophole for bringing it into the country. He manages this he defers all these taxes paid on fees by his clients, which he reinvests. He rolls money in circles through other global countries. He's got tons of sex scandals. He's got a constant attack on Israel. He has the Soros' Open Society Foundation. This is what was funding the campaign battle against Netanyahu when he ran for office, and they were trying to push liberals, anti-Israelites, into office. Can you imagine? I mean, that you talk about a country under siege. Israel belongs to the Israelites. And when people say, oh, it's a two-state solution, there's only two options you would ever encourage a two-state solution, okay? One is you've never been there. You've never seen the land. It's a tiny little sliver of property. It's irrelevant. If you look at a map, you can't even see it on the map. They might write the name, but in a relative scale, it's invisible, okay? So, but the second reason that you either hate Israel or you haven't been there, and those are the only two. And they put out a campaign that was backed by Obama, and they knew it, and Obama was campaigning against the Conservative Party to try to push an extremely radical pro-Palestinian, pro-ISIS agenda. Obama had, some of the most radical Islamic, whatever you call them, into the White House during his tenure as president. I mean, just countless visits. And he was interacting deeply with these people. He was a Muslim. He was a radical. George Soros is as well. And, this guy has been behind the single most consistently destructive attack on American soil towards our country. Destruction from within, false information, propaganda at a level you cannot even imagine. He's behind the false narrative of Donald Trump colluding with the Russians. He's got the media under control. He's got over 400 political activist websites that feed false information. In an interview, he was laughing about it, admitting it's true. Soros, what's weird is he's Jewish. His attacks on the country are staggering. Palestinian rights groups, liberal Israeli papers, and NGOs all receive semi-clandestine money to denigrate Israel and, or talk up Israeli war crimes. The source of funding was hidden until 2010, and liberal Jewish group J Street falsely claimed they'd never received funding from Soros, and then it was discovered. They found the paper trail. It was true, and it basically tracked back and showed that he had given hundreds of millions of dollars towards the destruction of Israel. He likes to keep himself hidden, and he's been convicted of insider trading numerous times. He's paid $2.3 million in fines, which is a joke. That's one of the biggest jokes on Wall Street is the insider traders. The fines are a joke. It's kind of it's like they almost laugh at one another and go, here's your fine, you know. So anyway, the bottom line is that this country's under attack. He's behind gun control. This man lived through Nazi Germany. He was part of the most cruel, heinous crimes of the Nazis as a Jew. He stood by and watched the literal genocide and extermination of his own people. He's a sick, sick man. Sick, sick. Okay, you get my point, I think. Along those same lines, he's pushed for heavy-duty gun control. Now, you and I know today, I'm sure, about the Las Vegas shooting. I am sickened by this. Sickened. Sickened, sickened, sickened. I mean, it ruined my day. It's so sad and sick and frustrating. And what I hate is the left comes out immediately to politicize it, starts attacking the NRA, attacking gun rights. You cannot, folks. Now, what that man did was sick. He went to the Mandalay Bay before a big, I guess, James Aldean or something like that concert and got a room 2 days early, apparently from a perch, a very nice, you know, opportunistic shooting spot, if you can imagine. And he spent 2 days preparing. He had 11 weapons. And then he, when the music was playing, he opened fire. He apparently, I don't know if he punched a hole in the window or what, because none of those windows open up. And he literally sat there and he just shot at people. Right now, they're estimating almost 60 dead and over 500 injured. So over 500 people sustained gunshot wounds, folks. Think of that. That is the most heinous, sick act of a violent gun shooting in the history of America. I mean, what in the world are we tolerating? So here we go. Oh, we got the left. You know, disarm America, disarm America. I'll tell you what, gun control doesn't work. We have to believe and trust our founding fathers. You've got to understand, if you don't, please take the time to educate yourself. These men were brilliant, okay? They were very brilliant. They knew what they were doing. They knew what they were up against. So many of them fought, bled, and died for our nation and lost family members and everything. There's a reason they know that we need this. They know that we need gun laws to control and protect our country. We absolutely, there's no other way you can defend yourself. Ben Franklin himself said that if every man, you know, they talked about the gun being the equalizer. If every man carries upon himself the ability to take another man's life, society has a wonderful way, he said, of regulating itself. And that is being taken away. The biggest problem was the Constitution and the Second Amendment. When they mention a well-regulated militia, they were specifically referring to protection from runaway tyranny of our government. Now, you mention that to a lefty, and they're going to flip. What's his name? Ben Shapiro mentioned this to Piers Morgan one time on a show. And he basically was called a lunatic and a nut and saying, you know, it's to protect us against our nation going rogue against us. That's what our founding fathers were for. What's really weird is Piers Morgan now lost his position at CNN. The decline began after the tongue lashing from Ben Shapiro. And what Piers Morgan did wrong is he's not from the U.S. What he did wrong is he went after gun rights, and he started to really affect the heartbeat of Americans. You know, we believe in the right to bear arms. There are these radical lefties that don't. I've run into them. There's these people. I'll tell you, when you get into these ghetto rats and these liberal women that are so terrified of guns, I know a friend who was dating a girl in college, and he was going hunting, and this girl's family had moved from California and lived in Billings, Montana. He was going hunting. He came by their house to see his girlfriend, stayed there for the night, and he brought some guns into his bedroom that he had in his truck. It was winter. And when this girl's mom found out there were guns in the house, she freaked out so bad, she threw him out of the house and told him to never see her daughter again. This is how hysterically radical this mindset gets. It's so crazy. They know nothing about it. I grew up, I think, honestly, without exaggerating, 5 years old, I was shooting a .22 and loving it. Learning the respect of a gun, learning the rules of a gun with my father. Never point the barrel here. Always point away. Learning never brush what we call brush somebody with a barrel. You don't pass a barrel of a gun by somebody. A rule that's even further is even if the gun's apart and you're cleaning it and you know it's empty, you still don't point it at somebody. You always treat a weapon as if it's loaded. You respect it. You know how to cross a fence. You set your gun over the fence and then you climb the fence. Many people have been maimed trying to climb a fence with their shotgun, and then they set it down, and a barbed wire pulls the trigger, and kaboom, they got a problem. The moral of the story is, if fathers, which is another problem, so many of these families are fatherless, these poor kids are growing up without fathers, this is where these radical thugs are coming from. If fathers take the time to take their kids out very young and let them shoot guns, take them to the gun range, take them to the pistol range, just let them shoot the gun. Go get your kids a .22. If you've got young kids or grandkids, go get a .22. Go buy a used one. .22s have no kick at all. It's a great educational gun. But it's also important after they shoot a .22 to let them shoot something with a little bit of kick. I think when my kid was probably 9 or 10, let me think here, probably about, yeah, he'd have been about 8 or 9, he got to shoot a .270. His grandfather had given him a .270 hunting rifle. He was far too young for it, but he got to shoot that gun and feel that kick. So he realized not all guns are .22s, but the point is this, the level of respect for the weapon. And then you don't get kids going out playing with them like they're toys. They don't. If all a kid knows about a gun is that he sees it on TV and they call it a GAT, you know, which is an abbreviation of the old Gatling gun, which is a gangster thing, and they're walking around thinking they're all bad from rap filth. Yeah, you're going to have problems. These kids are raised without dads. They're raised without men with dignity. They're raised under the pressure of gang warfare and gang families where they don't have a family and they better join a gang or they're going to end up dead, you know? This is a breach in our system. The fact of the matter is, folks, that the left in this nation, simply for the fact of gaining votes, is absolutely catering to socialism and division in this nation. They're lying to the people. We had almost 60 people dead today and over 500 injured. Hillary Clinton comes out and starts bashing on the NRA. Think about this. Let's say you lost a loved one in that event. Terrible. And Hillary, who lost the election, can't accept the fact, won't tell the truth, whatever, is going to come out and bash the NRA. I know, not from this situation, but you know, if someone was doing that the day after my father died, it'd be one thing if, you know, if doctors killed your family member and someone's blaming the doctors, that's different. But if my dad died from falling on his head and someone came out and started attacking the floor manufacturing companies because they don't make floors soft enough so that if you fall and crack your head, I'd be like, that's absolutely ridiculous. You're gonna hit your head on something hard someday. But it's just that it's that irrational and it's a lie. It's an absolute deceptive lie. It's not the NRA that shoots people. To be honest with you, it's the ownership of arms that prevents events from happening and stops them much sooner than normal. In this case, the guy was, basically in a sniper's perch. Had it not been apparently for the smoke from his rifles setting off a fire alarm, they would have had a hard time figuring out where he was. I know from friends in the military that if military was there, they have, you know, the night goggles that they can put on and they can see the heat signatures of where the guy is in no time and take him out. So what do we do in this country? Okay. I mean, everyone's like, oh, great. They want to go crazy. Everyone's sick. Everyone's mad. This is wrong. It's a problem. How do you balance our constitutional amendments with solutions to stop this? Okay. Now, let's just be really crazy and idealistic for a moment. If I could be president for a while and, well, it wouldn't matter who was, they'd all be against me anyway. I would propose, and the left would go crazy, I would propose a bill called Arm America, okay? I would say, here's what we are going to do. We are going to arm America. We're going to encourage Americans to arm themselves, to protect themselves. We're going to offer tax breaks, tax incentives for buying guns. But in order to get the tax incentive, you are going to have to go through special training programs. And we will have different tiers of authority or different tiers of certification. I would have the highest level of certification, which included a couple of weeks or at least a week of classroom training, a week of hand-to-hand training in handling the weapon, and maybe another week of training in rules and regulations and in crowd control and how to help, you know, situations like this, including emergencies and so on. With this certification, I would try to create a law where certain men were allowed, or women were allowed, to carry firearms into public places, regardless of the laws of that place. But it would have to be a form of deputization, a very serious form of education. They'd have to have a certain lack of a criminal record, a minimum of, you know, 10 years on certain stuff or whatever. You know, you could hash all that out. But basically, if you armed America, as Ben Franklin says, so that every man carries upon himself the ability to take another man's life, if we surrounded these situations with armed men that had their weapons secured, they had their weapon tested, they had their weapons certified, you know, there's so many things you could take it to. Sure, it wouldn't affect your ability to own firearms, but it would affect your ability to carry your firearm in areas that are otherwise considered either gun-free zones or high risk or whatever. That's what I would propose. The left would go crazy. The bill would have to be airtight, But would that not be a good start? Now, in this situation, the reason that I think it would be a problem is because he was high on a perch. He was way up in an opportunistic shooting position. You know, with the Arm America concept, it'd be nice that people are armed to defend themselves, but, or crowds. The biggest problem in this case was it would have taken a sniper rifle to get back at the guy, ultimately a 50 cal. But you don't, you're not going to be carrying a 50 cal. But basically, even an AR-15, if you have good shooters, once those bullets start flying back at the guy through the window, he's done. He's not going to be standing there shooting back. He's going to hit the deck, and the shooting is officially stopping. That would be my solution. Now, you know, there'd be other things about night vision. You know, would certain men in the Arm America movement carry certain levels of military equipment? You know, would they be authorized by the Arm America Foundation to carry this stuff? This is what I would like to see. Obviously, it won't happen. You'd have to have so much political clout to even offer it, because the political assassination would come so hard and so fast. But people think, well, that just exacerbates the problem. It's just more guns. Folks, here's the facts, okay? Gun crime statistics shows that gun control does not work, okay? The left is incessantly trying to find ways, new ways to take our guns from law-abiding American citizens in the name of reducing gun crime. However, the facts clearly show that gun control only exacerbates violent crime. And there's multiple facts to show this, okay? It is no different than blaming cars for automobile accidents and deaths. Well, of course, you have to have a car to get in a car wreck, right? But that doesn't mean a car is bad. The problem lies with the driver. You know, if we want to control guns, what about these guys that decide to go out with trucks and run over a bunch of people? Do you outlaw trucks? I mean, let's be realistic about this. Let's use our heads, okay? This is not a rational argument, but it's all they've got, and they never quit beating that same old drum. Washington, D.C.'s, which I was just at, gun ban, okay? They have a gun ban. It worsened the city's homicide rate, all right? In 76, D.C. implemented a law that banned citizens from owning guns so that only police officers could carry firearms. Those who already owned guns were allowed to keep them only if they were disassembled and or trigger locked. Trigger locks could only be removed if the owner received permission from the D.C. police, which was almost impossible. According to the prosecutor, Jeffrey Shapiro, at the time, the results were not good. Annual homicide rates rose from 188 in 1976 to 364 by 1988 to 454 by 93, with a continuous increase in no lulls in homicides. Gun-related homicides. The gun ban was struck down by the Supreme Court of the District of Columbia versus Heller. And homicides have steadily declined since then to 88 murders in 2012. So by 93, we were up to 454. They put guns back in the hands of the citizens. We're down to 88 again. Shapiro admits there were other factors involved in the decline of homicide rates, or he says there was, but he said that lifting the gun ban seems to be the most likely explanation. So in other words, the left always have to say, no, it's not true. We started a program of school lunches that made the young minorities less angry, or, you know, I mean, I was reading some other argument that I don't even remember what it was. It was irrational. It just made no sense whatsoever. So D.C. still has some of the strictest gun laws in the country and consequently is one of the most dangerous places in the country to live. The facts clearly show that homicides in D.C. rose after the ban was implemented and subsequently declined after the Supreme Court ruled the law unconstitutional. But if you think about it, the law was put in 74 and was not removed by the Supreme Court till the 90s. So it was in effect over 20 years. That, you know, if you think about it, if you live in a rural area, okay, go to, you know, I'm from Montana. Go out to a little town of Montana and break into houses at night. Oh, you don't want to do it? Why not? Because you know that in that rural America where you're dealing with real men, you're going to face the point of a gun. Just a flat fact. You know you're afraid. You go to the, you know, to the inner city of San Francisco and you've got about a 1 out of 100 chance of facing a gun. You go to rural town America, like where my wife's from, Townsend, Montana, population 2,354, and you got about a 93% chance of getting a gun in your face if you go in someone's house while they're there uninvited. The gun bans in Australia and Great Britain are always used by the left as evidence that gun control works. In two studies, a 2007 British Journal of Criminology study and a 2008 University of Melbourne study concluded that Australia's temporary gun ban had no effect on the gun homicide rate. Crime Research Prevention Center President John Lott had similar findings. So he goes on, prior to 96, there was already a downward trend in the firearm homicides, and the pattern continued after the buyback. And it's, you know, and then he goes on and he shows the increase that took place after the guns were confiscated and the fact that, you know, it's higher now than it's ever been and so on and so forth. The vast majority of shootings occur in gun-free zones. So back in this, I just jumped topics, but back in to the Australia-Britain thing, they've had an 89% spike in gun crime from 99 to 08, all nine, which all occurred after gun bans. They put in some more gun bans in 98, 99. They've had an 89% spike in gun crime. So the facts, if you look closely at the facts, the left's favorite example of Britain and Australia are examples of how gun control doesn't work. Plus the fact that if they're illegal, their idea is if nobody has a gun but the police, it's impossible. Well, criminals are criminals. Do you really think this guy that just shot from Mandalay would let that stop him from getting a gun? I mean, honestly, if you, no matter what's illegal, if you have the money, you can go on the black market and buy it. It's just stupid. Mass shooting. Okay, then there's another study that shows the vast majority of mass shootings occur in gun-free zones. The Crime Research Prevention Center determined that since 1950, get this, nearly 99% of mass public shootings have occurred in gun-free zones. 99%. Technically, a concert's a gun-free zone, I suppose. The terror attack in Orlando and the shooting that murdered singer Christina Grimmie in June also took place in gun-free zones. The reason's obvious. Deranged murderers want to be in a position to murder as many as possible, so they target areas where it's least likely to find armed resistance, which is what you find in a gun-free zone. And they're cowards. They're complete and total cowards, let's face it. So that is the bottom line there. There's, you know, they're just, these guys are the biggest pieces of trash you can imagine. Okay, and then there's this Lott guy from the Crime Research Prevention Center. He points out that there are 320 million people in America, but only 628,000 police officers. So it's impossible for the police to protect everybody, which is why it is prudent for citizens to arm themselves. And out of the 628,000 law enforcement officers, it's a smaller fraction that are on the street. It's a smaller fraction that handle violent crime. It just becomes infinitesimal. It's very low. According to the same guy, Lott, same organization, there's a clear correlation between higher firearm ownership and reducing police killings. So the conclusion came, there was a 3.6% decrease in police killings for every percentage point increase in those owning a firearm. So if you go from a 30% ownership to a 31% ownership, that lowers police killings by 3.6%. Wait a minute. More guns, less police shootings. Doesn't make sense, right? It does. You and I know both know, but the left would say, oh, that's bad statistics. The other thing that drives me nuts is my Bachelor of Science degree was in mathematics and statistics, okay? Statistics isn't just, you know, there's 130 people and 36 of them have a flu. 36 divided by 136 is, you know, 32% that are, that, you know, it's not that simple. It gets incredibly complicated. Statistics is phenomenal. When you start calculating standard deviations and all kinds of errors of margin and all the different variable activity and the likelihood something is or is not according to or related to probability versus random chance, and that's just putting it super lightly. It's absolutely extreme. It's excessive. It's mind-boggling, okay? And then my whole studies in college were to become an actuary. That's the person that does all of the statistical analysis of probability for insurance companies. And again, the mathematics are incredibly scientific. So when they figure this stuff out, it's very accurate. There's no, you know, and you'll get the left wing. Folks, be warned, if you're a Googler, when you see Snopes, okay, Snopes is supposed to be a website that corrects the record and tells the truth. And then there's another one out there, I don't know. They are left-wing propagandists. They purport to be keeping the record clean. However, they are the biggest propagandists of all. Be very wary of falling for the deception peddled by these people. They are masters of deception. They will literally take two words out of a statement and then negate it. In other words, if somebody said, is quoted, like they'll take speeches or quotes from our founding fathers, and they'll say, for example, when I said Ben Franklin said, if every man carries upon himself the ability to take another man's life, society has a wonderful way of regulating itself. They will take that quote, they'll change two words, and then say he never said it. For example, where it says, if every man carries upon himself the ability to take another man's life, society has a wonderful way of regulating himself. If they said, well, Ben Franklin never said, if every man carries upon himself the ability to end another man's life, a nation has a terrific way of controlling itself. Okay, I changed about five words. They'll say, he never said that. It's a lie. Well, they're right. It's called a straw man argument. It's something that never happened. So they create a phrase that he never did say and say it's true. It's a lie that he ever said it. I hope I didn't confuse you there, but it's all a play on words. It's called semantics. Beware. Be wise, folks. Do not believe anything other than the original source of information. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of good Christian authors out there that seek accuracy. You grab a book, you better have a bibliography in the back. And the bibliography must go to the original sources, not to some other professor experts that are spinning information to such a degree that they're just, you know, compounding the confusion. So they came, the 3.6% decrease per percent in increase in ownership. So the inverse is also true. From 13 to 15, the six states plus the District of Columbia that banned open carry actually experienced higher rates of police death, 20.2 versus 17.3 per 100,000 officers. So obviously there's no wonder that the recent National Association of Chief of Police survey found that 86.4% of 20,000 police chiefs and sheriffs support concealed carry and are overwhelmingly against further gun control. These are police. There's also a correlation between fewer mass public shootings and higher gun ownership. According to Lawton, the University of Chicago's Bill Landes, between 77 and 99, the right to carry laws reduced both the frequency and severity of mass public shootings. And to the extent of which mass shootings still occurred, they took place in these tiny areas in the states where permitted concealed handguns were not allowed. Again, gun-free zones. As the number of guns per person increases, gun violence also declines. So it's according to the Center for Disease Control, which found that gun ownership increased by 56%, and yet gun violence declined by almost 50% between 93 and 03. Why? Because Clinton pushed through the Brady Bill, everybody freaked out and armed themselves. If the premise of gun control zealots was correct, then wouldn't you think that gun violence would increase during a period of increased gun ownership, okay? The number of defensive gun uses are higher than the number of criminal firearm uses. Understand this, okay? The number of defensive uses are higher than criminal uses. Does the media tell you that? Heck no. Where do they tell you hero stories? Never. There was a range of 500,000 to over 3 million defensive gun uses in 2013, according to research from the Institute of Medicine and the National Research Council published by the Center for Disease Control. That same year, there were 11,208 firearm homicides and 414,000 plus non-fatal illegal gun uses. According to the CDC and National Justice, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Even when taking the low end of the defensive gun uses, it's clear that there are more defensive gun uses than criminal gun uses by Americans. So they serve a purpose better than they cause harm. You know, the bottom line is, folks, arm yourself. Get a concealed carry license. There's a gal in town that teaches classes that can help you get a concealed weapons permit that's good in like 38 states or something like that. You can look that up. She was using my facility for a while to teach. Then she moved to Cabela's. Her name's Carrie something. I can't recall. That's a good way to go. But you can just go down and get a concealed carry permit at the police department. It takes 30 days to get. Be armed, but train yourself. And don't ever, ever be an idiot. Be a self-controlled, great example of maturity. And a gun is never meant to be brandished or misused. A gun is used specifically for life or death, but train yourself and be prepared. Police are trained to run into deadly situations, and we as men of God should have the bravery and courage. So many people have fear. You know, a good friend of mine is just inundated in fear from episodes he dealt with growing up, and it prevents him from bravery and courage. I mean, it's gripping you. And if you struggle with fear, you absolutely need to face it. However you can, read scripture about fear. The other thing is submission to authority. We need to respect authority. We need to respect the laws of the land. I mean, I'll admit I've got a lead foot when I drive like nobody else. I've got sports cars and all kinds of crazy stuff. And I love to go into the middle of Montana and drive at, you know, speeds on, you know, out in the middle of absolutely nowhere at speeds that you probably wouldn't even believe, because I have some incredibly hopped up sports cars. And I've always been an absolute car nut. To me, if a car doesn't have at least 500 horsepower, it's not even worth discussing. Even my wife's Suburban has 650 horsepower. It's a problem that I have. Okay. And I love to drive like that. But, you know, we still, as time goes on, God's convicted me more and more to respect the laws of the land. But we need to just respect all authority. We need to respect if you go to a parking lot and the guy's telling you to do this or that, you do it. It doesn't matter if he's younger than you or you're more important or you're richer or you're more successful. What matters is the laws of God. And a heart of submitting to authority makes everything work well. And it also prevents us, if we resist authority and we lie and sneak around and we're dishonest. And, you know, especially folks, if you're in a job situation, I mean, you know, be to work on time, be in your desk on time. Work is unto the Lord all day. Don't sneak around and slither and go hang out at the, you know, at the water stand and waste time on the internet and sit and text your friends and, you know, work as unto the Lord. God watches. Do not be a weasel and wonder why God's not blessing you. And don't wonder why you might have anxiety and stress if you are not trying to serve the Lord in everything you do. It is so important. And God knows and people know, and you don't get away with it. And you need to glorify the God when people are not looking, not just when they are. Work ethic is a godly trait. Character is a godly trait. Integrity is a godly trait. We want to be good men and women of God in everything we do. We want to do our best. You know, if you work for an employer, do not just sit around and wait for them to give you specific directions and then either avoid them or do the absolute bare minimum. You know, if you go to, if you know, I come from a corporate background. If I, as a bank, had to go into a company and sell my products to get them to take it, I don't just say, well, we'll do whatever you want, you know, just tell us what you want, you know, and we'll try our hardest. I go in and I say, here's exactly what I'm going to do. Here's exactly the programs I'm going to offer. Here's, you know, I give them specific meat and say, this is what I will do for you. And, you know, you give them a product to grab onto. You just, you know, you don't just go in. If you use subjective forms of measurement, like I'll try my hardest, I'll do my best, you know, that's all subjective. You need to have specific measurable goals in what you do. And you can do that to your employer too. Do not be afraid. If people are full of fear, they're afraid often to make specific commitments because they're afraid of failure and they'd rather not make a commitment to which they can fail. Some people, there's a time and a place to avoid, you know, making certain promises and vows that you can't keep. But there's also accountability. Iron sharpens iron. And we've got to make specific, tangible promises and commitments. Now, there's a difference between doing that and making an oath to God. But setting goals for ourselves and looking for accountability is a completely different topic. It's something that we as believers, we need to do. We need to raise the bar and challenge ourselves. You think of athletic environments, you know, if a coach just sit there and said, boys, you got to try your hardest, you got to try your hardest. You know, if they run a play and it fails, okay, and we've also got to not be defensive, okay, we've got to be receptive to constructive criticism. If an athlete goes out and they run a play and it fails, and the coach calls them back and goes, that play failed, and the guy's going, but coach, we tried our hardest, we really want to win, we really... It doesn't matter. The play failed. We've got to change our strategy. We've got to get another specific strategy that's going to get that ball through the goal line. It doesn't matter how people feel. It doesn't matter what they think. What matters is when the rubber hits the road, you know, in that next time that whistle blows, how well are they going to execute and accomplish their goals? You cannot accomplish your goals without specific, measurable, obtainable, and practical goals. We can overshoot. Some people say shoot for the stars and end up at the moon. There's, you know, that's a work ethic. But when you set goals that are just ridiculous like that, so that you're always failing and falling short, they become irrelevant as well. God knows each one of our talents and abilities. He knows our skills. We know the parable of talents. The worst thing that we can do is waste our time on earth blowing the talents that God gave us. We've got to identify our strengths and weaknesses, not just focus on our strengths, find ways to improve and overcome our weaknesses, and then absolutely challenge ourselves with self-discipline on a day-by-day, minute-by-minute basis, where we just go out, we address where our issues are, we get up, we face our fears. The problem is when we avoid fears and areas of discomfort for too long, we start to feel worse and worse about ourselves, and it becomes harder and harder to do something about it. And then we just grow frustrated, like exercise. Okay, say you go years and years and years, and you let your body just fall apart. It's that first workout that's the hardest, isn't it? And it's the commitment of that first week, second week, third week. You just got to get up and do it. Every day, one day at a time. God will give you the strength to do it. But he's given us the ability to write our own novel. We can write our own destiny. That's the wonderful thing about free will. We need to adapt to our talents. Psalms 37 tells us, if you delight yourself in the Lord, he will give you the desires of your heart. That's because if you are connected with God, your desires are his desires. If you seek God and you desire more than anything for clarity, and you get rid of your narrative and your agenda, that's what made David a godly man, is he would stand before God sincerely and say, Lord, have it all. Make me the man you want me to be. And then did his very best to stand strong. It didn't matter how easy or hard it was. It didn't matter how it made other people feel. And, you know, we've got accountability to God. We cannot look at man. The Bible's crystal clear. It says, how can you say that you believe in God when you seek the glory that comes from man and not the glory that comes from God? We've got to live our lives for God. And in most cases, if our spirit's correct, we will please man. If we're truly doing our best at whatever we do, we will please man. And if we don't, you know, we can adapt and change. But when we're working for an employer or whatever we're doing, if we are truly seeking to please the Lord, the way to please the Lord is to seek to please our authority. I mean, let's face it, that pleases God. You look at Joseph, you look at Daniel. These guys weren't just phenomenal. They obviously had a way with authority. Not only did they give lip service, they let their actions back it up. And they knew, those leaders knew, that if they said they were going to do it, not only would it get done better than anybody else could do it. So thanks again for tuning in, folks. I appreciate it. I didn't cover financial stuff. Get in, call us, let us build your portfolio. We're on fire right now. The world's on fire. Times are tough. Something's ready. Don't be a fool. Take care. God bless. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back on Wednesday. Appreciate your loyalty. Bye-bye.